This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
several dozens protesters marched to the Electoral Commission offices Tuesday in central Nairobi, demanding justice for Chris Msando. The election official was found dead Monday after going missing Friday.
That's Mohammed Yusuf with the latest from Kenya's capital. Details next.
Also, following an outbreak of highly pathogenic avian influenza in the region, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization calls an emergency meeting of southern African countries. And Malawi police issue an arrest warrant for former President Joyce Banda, saying they wish to question her.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Kenyan civil society groups took to the streets of Nairobi to demand justice in the killing of the election official found dead a week before the hotly contested nationwide polls. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf has the latest from Kenya's capital.
Several dozens protesters marched to the Electoral Commission offices Tuesday in central Nairobi, demanding justice for Chris Msando. The election official was found dead Monday after going missing Friday. According to the head of Kenya's Electoral Commission, Msando was tortured before he was killed. Anti-corruption campaigner John Githongo says Msando's killing was meant to derail the electoral process.
The timing of his torture and murder serves to undermine Kenya's election management body at this most crucial time in the work of the IEBC.
The nationwide vote is 1 week away, and the organization of the elections has been a source of tension during the past year. Msando was to oversee the use of biometric voter technology. Kenya Human Rights Commission Executive Director George Kigoro helped organize the march.
Even as an investigation gets on its way, we remind the state of its duty to take whatever necessary measures it finds possible to secure the safety of the IBC commissioners and all its staff. An intimidated and fearful staff cannot fully deliver on its mandate or respect its oath to act without fear or favor in carrying out the important responsibilities it has been entrusted by the citizens of Kenya.
Political parties on both sides have condemned Msando's killing. The ruling Jubilee coalition issued a statement urging police to investigate, and one of the leaders of the main opposition alliance, Musalia Mudavadi, spoke to reporters.
Chris, on television last week, assured Kenyans that they need not worry about the Kenya Integrated Electronic Management System, as he was sure it would work. That no effort was made to camouflage this killing as an accident shows the determination of the killers to send a chilling message that they will stop at nothing to ensure the outcome they desire.
Electoral Commission Chairman Wafula Chebukati met with the protesters and said the commission is determined to do its job.
We lost our dear employee. I lost an employee whom I used to consult every other day. We are mourning with the family. We are mourning with the IPC family. But this country is bigger than all of us. We have a mandate to deliver to the Kenyan people.
Kenya's Inspector General of Police called Musando's killing a crime of grave proportions and said a team has been assembled to follow what he called several crucial leads to bring the murderers to justice. The United States and Britain have offered to assist Kenya in the investigation. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization has called an emergency meeting this Wednesday in South Africa of all countries in the Southern Africa Development Community following an outbreak of highly pathogenic avian influenza. Aid workers are concerned what this could mean for food security in the region, where a fall armyworm invasion and drought have decimated crops in recent years. Sebastian Mumfu has more from Harare.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, says besides Zimbabwe, the other countries in the region hit by the avian influenza outbreak are the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Africa. While officials haven't released the figures for the numbers of birds affected, the FAO said the outbreak is currently concentrated in one province of Zimbabwe and three in South Africa. Earlier this year, the FAO issued a warning to the SADC regional bloc after the virus was detected in the Lake Victoria area in East Africa. David Peary, the head of FAO in Southern Africa, told VOA it is urgent to contain the outbreak.
Avian influenza is a transboundary pest and disease, and it can move from one country to another, from one side to another. So there is a possibility very easily that it could spread in those particular countries or even beyond the borders. For this reason, we need to control it and to make sure that there is also prevention measures put in place, both by the countries affected, but other countries that have not yet been affected. Poultry is what a lot of families depend on for protein. It is the cheapest protein. See, it is also coming, I think, in the backdrop of a situation where we had 2 years of heavy drought, the last one of which was affected by El Nino. And that was a disaster in itself for that sub-region. More recently, we have had an outbreak of four armyworm, which has also affected some farmers very, very badly. So we cannot afford another very serious outbreak that could reduce food security or livelihoods in the sub-region.
Dr. Unesu Ushokunze Obatolu, the chief veterinary officer of the Zimbabwe's Ministry of Agriculture, has this advice for farmers.
Just make sure that birds that are being produced do not have any contact with anything from outside. You know, because sometimes in traditional systems, people receive poultry as gifts, and they put it in amongst the poultry that they are having at home. That is very dangerous. Normally, these viruses affect, some of them can cause diseases in people, but this one is a bit different. That gives us a bit of joy, but it's not easy to deal with because it spreads very quickly amongst birds and it kills birds. So those who are doing businesses with high numbers of birds are very, very susceptible.
In recent years, African countries have responded to avian flu outbreaks by closing their borders to poultry imports and killing large numbers of exposed birds. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Malawi police have issued an arrest warrant for former President Joyce Banda, saying they wish to question her about her suspected involvement in the 2013 Cashgate corruption scandal. Lamek Messina reports for VOA from Blantyre.
The arrest warrant for Malawi's former president comes nearly 4 years after the Cashgate scandal first broke. In 2013, a British auditing firm hired by the government discovered $32 million in government funds had been paid fraudulently to contractors, in particular private construction companies, for goods and services that were never delivered. 10 people have been convicted of theft and money laundering, including the supposed ringleader, former ruling party official Oswald Lutepo. In all, about 70 people have been arrested. Police say investigations have continued and they have unearthed credible evidence of the involvement of former President Joyce Banda and need to question her. Malawi police spokesperson James Kadadzela spoke to VOA.
The evidence gathered raises reasonable suspicion that the former president committed offences relating to abuse of office.
He said Malawi police have notified all Interpol member countries of the arrest warrant. The Cashgate scandal was a major blow to Banda's administration. Malawi temporarily lost much of its foreign aid, and Banda lost her bid for re-election in 2014. She had ascended to the presidency just 2 years earlier after her predecessor, Bingwa Mutharika, died in office. Banda was his VP. Banda left the country to pursue personal business interests and is currently in the United States. Banda's spokesperson and Kuchi Chantunya told VOA Banda is yet to be served with a warrant.
When we see the warrant, when we get that confirmation, she'll make herself available to the police.
The timing of the arrest warrant has left some Malawians like this business owner asking, why now?
Issues to do with Joyce Banda being connected to the cash gate have been there since she went out of power. If government was committed to arrest her, there were so much talks, so many evidence given in court during that time. It's much more political than the fight against corruption.
In the wake of the cash gate scandal, the current government pledged to crack down on corruption to reassure foreign donors. In mid-July, police arrested former Agriculture Minister George Chabunda and two other individuals in connection to another scandal known as Maize Gate. They are accused of illegally procuring 100,000 tons of maize from neighboring Zambia. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
A new report on South Sudan is renewing calls for sanctions and an arms embargo on the country's top leaders of both warring parties. The Human Rights Watch says they have accumulated credible evidence of serious human rights violations committed by both sides during the nearly four-year-long conflict. Ayan Bior has more from Washington.
President Salva Kiir, former First Vice President Riek Machar, and former Army Chief of Staff Paul Malong are three of the nine men singled out in the report that Human Rights Watch says should face sanctions for their role in the conflict that has devastated the social and economic structure of the country. Jahan Henry, senior researcher in Human Rights Watch's Africa division, says based on their research, the three men and other leaders have been implicated in abusive operations across the country.
We have come to the conclusion now, after almost 4 years of conflict in South Sudan, that there is sort of mounting evidence of the role of key commanders in the ongoing atrocities. There are two components to it. First is overseeing the troops that are committing these atrocities, which gives a certain liability to the top commanders. But the second is failing to then prevent them or stop them. So there's been a failure on the part of the top leadership to bring an end to what has been so widely documented now for the entire duration of the conflict.
HRW is also recommending sanctions on Lieutenant General Bola Kut, who oversaw Gudele and Mio Saba during the violence in December 2013, and General Johnson Olong, an opposition commander who allegedly recruited child soldiers in the Upper Nile region. The report names five other generals who have been implicated in abuses during the conflict. HRW has long called for an arms embargo on South Sudan and targeted sanctions against top leaders in the government and opposition forces. To date, six individuals are on the UN sanctions list, which includes a travel ban and asset freeze. HRW is urging that the list be expanded to include top political leaders and generals closely tied to the conflict. Today's report focuses on civilian testimony from Kajo Keji in the former Central Equatoria State, as well as Pajuk in neighboring Eastern Equatoria State, between June 2016 until this past May. HRW says in both areas, government soldiers committed serious crimes against civilians. The conflict spread to the western parts of the Greater Equatoria region in late 2015 and expanded southeast since then. The rights group says the attacks in Kajo Keji began in mid-2016. The report says witnesses described at least 47 unlawful killings by government soldiers there, although Henry says researchers believe the number is much higher.
It looks like a very dangerous situation for them. Certainly people are very afraid to remain and even to go back. We met with refugees living in the settlements in northern Uganda, and they almost all said that they were afraid to return home. And those few who did, for collecting food or for guarding their livestock, reported facing various types of dangers as well.
In January, a UN report noted that during the violence that erupted a little over a year ago, both government and rebels committed serious human rights violations and abuses, and violations of international humanitarian law, some possibly amounting to war crimes. Human Rights Watch reiterated the commission's mandate to collect and preserve evidence that can be used to prosecute those responsible for war crimes and crimes against humanity in fair and credible trials.
This situation can't continue. It's already been 4 years, and there is clear evidence that atrocity crimes are taking place. So by taking action to signal that these people are responsible, this is a way to halt them, hopefully to halt them and to change the actual conduct.
Under the former U.S. Obama administration, a U.S.-led UN resolution to enact an arms embargo and sanctions on South Sudan failed in December. Russia, China, and six other Security Council members abstained from voting, killing the resolution. In April, U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley urged the Security Council to impose an arms embargo and additional sanctions on South Sudan. That has yet to take place. Ayan Bior for VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Swuhib, 21 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Civil society groups took to the streets of Nairobi to demand justice in the killing of an election official. And a new report on South Sudan by Human Rights Watch is renewing calls for sanctions and arms embargo on the country's top leaders of both warring parties. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
In Malawi, a new study recommends conducting door-to-door testing so more men can learn whether they are infected with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. Men test at a much lower rate than women, putting them at higher risk of transmitting the virus. From Blantyre, Lamek Messina has more on a pilot study that successfully tested many men in their homes.
The study by the US-based NGO, the Global AIDS Interfaith Alliance, shows 77% of males do not go for testing compared with 59% of females. The door-to-door HIV testing pilot project aimed to reach populations with lower rates of HIV testing in rural Malawi. The project was conducted in Mulanje district, south of Malawi, where 21% of the adult population is HIV positive. According to the study, many men were reluctant to go for voluntary HIV testing because of the perception that hospitals are places for women and girls. Elizabeth Geoffroy is the author for the study.
At our clinics, there's lots of women and children coming. They're viewed as female spaces. Men didn't necessarily feel comfortable to come when there were, 100 women with sick children.
The NGO's monitoring and evaluation manager says another reason is that HIV testing services are mostly offered at inconvenient times for men who have formal jobs. Michael Bondo is a resident of Nkando area in Mulanje district. Bondo told VOA that going for HIV testing is not necessary for him.
I can't go for HIV testing because, first of all, I'm a married man. And some time back, my wife was pregnant. Before starting receiving treatment, she underwent HIV testing. So to me, it was the assurance that if my wife is negative, I'm negative as well.
Bondo says as a breadwinner for the family, he is always busy and he goes to the clinic only when he is very sick. Critics say door-to-door HIV testing would likely lead to more stigma and discrimination because of the absence of confidentiality and also lack of proper counseling facilities. But Joe Floyd denied this.
When we actually come to a household, it's a great opportunity for counseling, which actually has better outcomes than if the woman was tested by herself at one of our clinics and she may have to go home and tell her husband. Oftentimes there are cases of gender-based violence or abandonment in that situation.
According to the study, nearly half of those tested were men. The test results are known within minutes before the trained health professional leaves one's home. Joseph Galitela is among those tested. He told VOA that household HIV testing is very flexible because one is able to choose for himself whether to be tested inside or behind his house. He says due to pressure of work, he had no time to go to the clinic without being sick. But when the health professional came to his home, he felt it was a very important development. Based on the success of the pilot study, the Global AIDS Interfaith Alliance is currently fundraising to implement a door-to-door campaign across the entire Mulanje district. Lameck Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll preview the August 8th Kenyan presidential race between incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta and former Kenyan Prime Minister Raila Odinga. The latest public opinion polls say the ballot is too close to call. That's on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
that AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.